Well, hi. We're John and Chris, and that's fine. Just John and Chris, and we're delighted you're all here tonight. And thank you for all of those really delicious, wonderful desserts. And we are talking about how we're going to be able to get back here next week. not sure we got time to do that, but we have some special guests here, actually, tonight, too. Jeff and Eileen Mann up here in the front on the left side of the auditorium.
Stand up.
Okay,
stand
you guys, stand up. Now, they're old friends from a few years ago. So, Jeff, why don't you tell them how we met and we got started.
John and I were teammates and traveling roommates in the University of Wisconsin gymnastics team way back when.
Well, that was very, very politically well done. I got to call on you again. No, and they came to Sweden, so they came and ministered with us in Sweden for a little while, some years ago. We'd love to be able to share a little bit with you of what's been going on the last 3 years. We're on a three-year cycle, so we're in Sweden 2.5 years, and then we're back for 6 months. We're kind of getting towards the end of our 6 months back. We lost the first 2 months to COVID, so we kind of had to scrunch everything together as far as traveling and visiting to the time that we had left. So we couldn't change plane tickets. We'll be flying back to Sweden on the 14th of June, so we got just over a month left to go. We want to introduce you to a little bit about what's been going on, and Chris is going to share a lot of the podium here with me because she's just a better speaker. So this is our mission statement, is to evangelize unbelievers, that's important, and to disciple believers to become reproducing disciple makers. That's what the Great Commission is all about. Teach them how to walk with Jesus. We have four children. Our oldest son, Jonathan, is probably right now this minute tying up from Joe Biden's visit to the city of Chicago, where he works as a Chicago police officer. So the whole Corps was mobilized so that they could be there on the ready. They have four children, live in Chicago. Our son...
I should just say he's very discouraged. He feels like everybody hates him. And he was so idealistic when he went into it. And so if you think of him, we love prayers.
Or anybody else that wears the uniform, yeah. If you think about it, you probably already do. They say, thanks for your service.
Yeah, they
do. Goes a long way.
That, I'm sure.
Our son Daniel is a project engineer at a large company in Chicago. They live there with his new bride. She's still a bride because they haven't finished their honeymoon yet, although they've been married for 2 years. They married during COVID, so we were in Sweden, couldn't come, and we waved and gave her blessing long distance. And our youngest is Anders. He is doing his medical residency in psychiatry at the State University of New York up in Syracuse, New York. And you can pray for him, too, because he feels isolated and alone up there. Our daughter Tina is the only one of our four children that decided to stay in Sweden because she fell in love with one of the young Swedish men that we had been discipling. His name is Philip, who is a full-time teacher at the Christian school and one of the praise team leaders in our church. This is our ministry center in our home, rebuilt after the fire. You guys have been around for a while, remember that, and have prayed us through all of that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We now have a beautiful new home and place to minister. But the question really is, why Sweden? I mean, you don't normally think of Europe, Western Europe, especially as a mission field. Why should we send missionaries to Sweden? Well, there's an answer to that question, and it starts with this, and that is just to recognize the demographics of the population. 10.2 million people reside in Sweden. Of those 10.2 million, probably 10.1 million don't know Christ. So they are separated from Christ, no hope without God in the world. That's a pretty good description of the country of Sweden today. We use this sometimes in groups when we're going around to ask, just for sake of comparison,
But we have new statistics here. So don't think last time we asked.
So we're going to throw out a couple of questions. First is, what percentage of Americans on a survey will say, I'm an atheist? What do you think?
Now, this doesn't mean
not how many,
how
there
many
are
not saved.
How many people in the United
actually
States on a survey will say, I'm an atheist? What do you think?
5%.
5%.
Good guess.
Right. Yeah, right on, 4%. And what about in Sweden? How many Swedes would say on a survey they're atheists? What do you think? Guess.
80%.
75-80%. Yeah. We have somebody that's really up to date on the statistics. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many believers are there? Nobody knows but God. But we've been there a long time. We figure probably about 1%. All right, now think about that for a minute. What's on the other side of that statistic? That means 99% unbelievers.
So
the next question.
You don't notice Christianity in the culture. It's too small.
So the next question is, what defines a mission field? And a disturbing statistic that I don't really like to show, but it's true, and that is that Muslims now in Sweden outnumber evangelical Christians by 5-1. About 100,000 believers in Sweden. So thankful that there are believers in Sweden. But now 500,000 Muslims, because of the aggressive immigration policy they've had from Muslim countries. So what can we do? Well, we have a very simple strategy. The first thing is to show love. It has to start there. And evangelizing Swedes, show love. And then the second thing is to share truth. That's just how you have to communicate the gospel in that country, pretty much anywhere today. How do we do that? Well, through preaching.
We have asked you to pray for John's ability in Swedish, in preaching and teaching and so forth. And I know you've prayed for him. And I just want to tell you, thank you for that, because people do not know he's not Swedish now. Yeah. And he has an enormous vocabulary, and biblical vocabulary and theological vocabulary, which is very hard to get in Sweden because people don't use those words. You know, so thank
and
you for praying.
She can brag on me like that because there's no Swedes here.
But, you know, people that are not musical have a hard time getting the right accent. I am totally amusical. And every time I open my mouth, they know I'm from the U.S. Except a few people now. The last 3 years, they're starting to say, are you from England? Getting closer.
That's huge progress here. So how do we do that? Yeah, through preaching. We do it through teaching the Bible, teaching small groups, discipleship, both individuals and couples, pastoral ministry. I don't have a license to marry in Sweden, but because I have my ordination and my license in the States, but which isn't recognized there. But the couples that want to get married in the church, they get married by a justice of the peace the day before, and then we have a big church meeting. A wedding the next day.
And we borrow the church.
We don't
have a church like that.
We actually don't have a church, so we have to borrow a church or rent a church. So pastoral ministry, counseling. We did this even during COVID.
I want to say something about that. This is our deck, and we had two infrared heaters up on the wall, and then we have an awning that comes out over and holds the heat in, and then we wear jackets and stocking caps. And I could be out there until the first week of December during COVID. So it really worked.
And then, of course, evangelism. And this is a group of former Muslim people from Iran. All of them have come to Christ. The one that's nearest Chris is our translator, because she's been a Christian the longest and in our church the longest. A lot of times when they come, they don't speak either English or Swedish, so we don't have a common language, and we need an interpreter. So the Great Commission is Matthew 28. Go therefore and make disciples of how many nations? All nations. Baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. We baptize in a lake in the summer. If we have to baptize somebody during the winter, we have to borrow a church again that has a baptismal.
But at this place, this big rock that goes up high, and so the whole church is up on the rock, and then we celebrate afterwards. So everybody brings food, and then there's a beach way it goes all around this other side, and Swedes have never seen anything like this, you know. So we always get an audience there. What are those people doing? That's great.
They hear the music, and we, you know, we've got guitars, and we've got a little megaphone or something, so that people giving their testimony, and then they're getting baptized. So it's just fascinating for the non-religious, non-theistic Swedes walking by out on a hike through the woods to see this. So, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always to the end of the age. And you've prayed for this lady in the middle. Her name is Layla.
Layla, do you remember? Last time we were here, I asked for 100 people that would pray for Layla to be able to stay in Sweden. Well, for the ones that don't know who she was pregnant, a young married couple in a car accident. The husband was killed. She was injured badly, but the baby lived, and there he is. Keon Mayer. He's 14 now. So in Iran, the mother may keep the boy until he's 7, and then the father's family gets him. Well, when he turned 7, she didn't want to give up her only child. And so tortured her. They tried to get the boy, and she went underground. And she found a job cleaning for a woman who was a Catholic, and she started asking questions about Jesus, and the woman said, well, come on to my church and find out. You're allowed to be a Catholic in Iran if, you know, your grandparents were Catholic, your mother was Catholic, but no proselytizing. So she went, and then the father-in-law had somebody there taking pictures of who went to that Catholic church and brought him a picture of her there. Well, then he was enraged, and that's when they tortured her again and beat her
to a pulp.
And she got away, or maybe they left her in a heap. I don't have that clear, but people gave money, and she escaped and got to Sweden.
Smuggled out.
And then she had two brothers that had already gone to Sweden. And when she was there, she heard about John was baptizing another former Muslim, which we don't advertise, so I don't really know how she heard it. But she came up to him and said, baptize.
She couldn't speak Spanish, you know, or English.
Yeah.
Just Farsi.
But we don't do it, you know, immediately then. We have to find out if the person's really saved and if they understand what they're doing. So John and I met with her for about 9 months with Sherry, our translator, Sunday afternoons. And about 5 months into this,
she came to faith.
Yeah.
Serious about her reading and study of God's Word. We got her a Farsi Bible. And she just was growing and growing. Five months later, she comes up.
And she says, I forgive my father-in-law. We hadn't even talked about forgiveness, you know.
That was God working in her heart directly.
And so then it was getting close to her third time to come before the authorities. And people in the States were praying. We were praying there. And so John made a book of pictures of her. And we had everybody in the church, any pictures you've got of Layla, give them to us, of her at church, at a Bible study, whatever.
It was a photographic journal to document her involvement and Keon Mayer's involvement in the Swedish society.
But specifically in Christianity. So then a week before, this is the courthouse here. You see the policeman at the back? He's standing outside the door.
Oops, I'm doing the wrong thing here. Oh, my. I've got to go backwards.
Anyhow.
There we go.
A week before this. Actually, I think it was three days.
There's the policeman right there.
It was, 3 days before, she lifted up her sleeve and she showed me the cigarette burns. I said, Layla, we have to have a picture of that. She didn't want to have a picture and have men looking at her arm, you know, she's from a Muslim country. And then she showed me her back and the cigarette burns all over there. And then she reached up and she took out all her teeth.
Upper
she
front
did
teeth.
She did not have one tooth left.
Her entire range of
they
upper,
had knocked
upper
out front, all her teeth.
Upper teeth were
they
gone.
They had broken a bunch of bones, but of course that heals. There's no evidence of that. But she let us take the pictures. We added them to the book.
Submitted it as evidence
and they
to
were
the court.
We're sitting in the. In
this is the kind of courthouse
outside.
Here. This is her last chance to stay.
And John is witness
three,
to.
Three strikes and you're out. This is the third time.
John had witnessed
yeah.
to. Yeah. To Keon Mayer several times, but he's not ready to accept Christ. But
thank you for praying for her, and God has so wonderfully answered prayer.
Yeah.
How?
Well, I was just going to tell him what Keon Mayer said to me.
Okay.
He's looking over. I was nervous. And Keon Mayer says, you know, you've just got to have faith.
14-year-old kid who is a Muslim non-believer yeah. is telling us, yeah.
Anyhow.
You're right, yeah.
Anyhow, the immigration authority is like the prosecuting attorney. And he listened, and at the end he said, I still don't buy it. And then he walked out. And then the judge and there were two other men.
Councilman.
They turned to her and they said, Layla, don't worry. We believe you.
We believe you.
And she got to stay.
Got permission to stay.
So she would have been killed, you know,
nobody
if she'd
really
been sent back.
Even the Christians had a hard time believing that she would succeed, but God just made it possible.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I did the last year, particularly before we got back home, was spend time with my good friend and prayer partner, Pastor George. He was my first student when we first moved to Sweden all those years ago because he could speak seven languages fluently, including English. That's the only language I spoke when we moved there, so I could teach him in English. And as the years went on, we became really, really, really good friends, and he became one of maybe the best Bible teacher in all of Sweden. He's actually born in Romania, so he became jumped ship as a Romanian rock band drummer and found Christ on the streets of Gothenburg and then eventually found his way to our seminary in Uppsala where I taught him. And then we moved down both to Gothenburg together, so a lot of years together. Just loves God so deeply and loves the Word and loves ministry. You cannot keep him out of the pulpit. You can't keep him away from ministry.
But he was born with a degenerative disease of the liver and kidneys. And it's very painful. One time he fainted. He just fell over on the floor in one of John's classes because it would just be like a place on his liver would rupture, and then another place would rupture. And
constant pain all his adult life, and he just struggled through. He just worked through it and ministered through it effectively everywhere, both in Sweden, and then eventually when the Iron Curtain fell, in Romania also. And in fact, I started out encouraging him to go to Romania, and then he ended up encouraging me to go to Romania. He started doing mission trips down there, and then he said, John, you need to come down and teach these pastors. They don't have anybody to teach them. I said, well, okay, I'd be glad to do it. So this is way back shortly after the Ceausescu regime fell in 1990 at a Bible conference I was doing at a church in Western Romania. So he died then a year ago. But the whole year before that, he was so sick, in so much pain. He was basically homebound, and large part of that was he was bedbound. And on dialysis, the only time he got out of the house was to go back to do dialysis, and it's a really rough treatment. And I felt God calling me to invest in his last days because it wasn't looking like he was going to last so long. So I visited him almost every day, and it was just a wonderful growing experience for me of seeing God answer my prayer for my own helplessness in knowing what to feed him, what to give him for spiritual food every day. And God would answer. He'd lead me to a passage. And I'd go and we'd pray and we'd share and we'd talk and we'd discuss. And then we'd get into the Word and I'd share something that God had given me to give to him. And it was always just what he needed. In fact, one time I was there towards the end, I carry my Bible around and it's falling apart. I need to get a new Swedish Bible. I keep it in a cover.
Zipper case.
A zipper case. So I have to zip 1, 2, 3 times to open my Bible. And I was unzipping. You know, we were to that point that day. And he just leaned back in his chair and he closed his eyes. Oh, how I love that sound. And I'm looking around the house. What sound did I miss? And I looked at him, and he's just sitting there with a big smile. Oh, this sound? That was it. Because he so loved to hear God's word.
Sometimes he was in too much pain, though, and John would just sing to him, sing hymns to him, or give him a foot rub or a back rub or something. But George was, we miss him. Both of us miss him terribly.
So that was a lot of what I did during the last year there before we came home, all during COVID. So there are other things that I didn't have to do.
Okay, this picture represents the people that came to Christ. We did this youth ministry on the side for about 10 years, and many young people. Youth ministry in Sweden is, anybody remember? 14 years old to 30. Okay. So a lot of them intermarried, and we taught them waiting for sex till marriage, which we didn't have any support from any Swedish Christians for that. But it's so wonderful because they're the backbone of our church now, and they don't have all this baggage that a lot of other people have. Anyhow, many of them got married and moved to different cities, and there's no Bible-teaching church there. So we feel the need to keep mentoring them, keep like pastoring them almost. She calls me every other week, and we talk for 2 hours and pray and talk about her family, and she sent her daughter to live with us for a week who trusted Christ. And so anyhow, we have this follow-up going on in different cities and so forth. This is a couple we're doing premarital counseling with, another Layla, and Jonathan. Doesn't he look like a...
He's one of the original Swedes, you see.
He's one of the Vikings, yeah. This is a wonderful gal. Now, we tell you the details that we would never put in our prayer letters when we get to see you in person, because it's too it's private things about people, but we're assuming you're never going to meet these people. And you don't put anything online about what the Swedish missionary said. This is a gal who's very high up in Volvo, and she's married to a fella who's very high up manager in Volvo Cars. They're two different companies. But he has been abusing her since they got married emotionally, and if she pays too much attention to the little kids, he throws himself on the ground in the fetal position, starts screaming and crying. It's like a 2-year-old fit. And so another counselor referred them to us. This is the thing. At this point in our lives, we get all kinds of referrals. We are in a reaping mode now. It's like we finally have established our reputation, and that's one of the reasons we don't want to quit. So anyhow, they came, and the idea was that John was going to be the moderator and keep him quiet so that she would have an opportunity finally to read what she'd written about the horrible stuff he called her and did. And so she got through it, and John kept him quiet. And you think he liked John?
I was not a popular person in his eyes after that.
But then I have been meeting with her, you know, and about the 9-month point, she said to me, when I first came to you, I thought there was only two ways possible for my life. I get a divorce or I live in misery the rest of my life. But you've been opened up a third way of Christ living in me and giving me joy and peace. And, oh, that's the... Can you hear me when I get away? Okay. I just feel like I can't get seen when I'm... So, anyhow.
Just grow.
Yeah. But he saw she was becoming a godly woman. And he liked this, you know. And so then he started thinking, maybe John's not so bad. So he's been coming over, trying to weasel himself in to be John's friend, mow our grass, fix our broken mower. And
well, he's a manipulator, and sometimes that's just a way to get people beholden to them so that they'll do what you want them to do. And I know how that game works, so I'm kind of taking a neutral position. But the longer I see him trying to make these friendly efforts, the more I'm beginning to realize that it's real. Really wants to be my friend.
Yeah, and a week before we came back to the States, we had a young fellow that had come to Christ in our youth years ministry, and he's dying of cancer, and he wanted an opportunity to preach. And so he preached on marriage. And he was preaching on how the wife's goals become the same as the husband's goals become, and they're so unified and everything, which is maybe a little extreme, but anyhow. One of the guys in the church, who was a son of a woman that I had counseled for many years, and his father had been extremely abusive, but he could stand up and pray in the church, you know, and be so... He was a case, but so that guy, who's about 45 now, Swedes just speak out in the middle of a sermon. Like they might say, how can you say that? I don't think the Bible says that. That's what you got to be ready to back yourself up, you know. Anyhow, so that's how he just spoke
preaching
out.
Preaching is an exciting occupation in Sweden.
Yeah. So he just spoke out, and he said, what are the dangers of what you've just preached on? I really can't think of any dangers of that. Well, I knew what he was referring to, you know, his parents' situation. And I think of my gals that have been abused. So I spoke up. It's the first time I've ever done it in a preaching situation. And I said, well, I think what he means is in an abusive situation, that could be dangerous because it is not showing love to allow another person to kill you. It doesn't help them either. And that's all I said.
This was all online, so everybody's a little square, and his square was on Zoom.
Yeah, but he also keeps his blanks.
He blocks his out so you don't see him.
Coming, but he's been coming about 6 months to our church that way, this John. So anyhow, he threw himself in the car, drove over to our house,
came in.
He said, I heard what you said.
Oh.
Tell me how to live. We
had tell me how to
like,
live. We're leaving in 6 days.
He thought I was
now
talking about him.
Time out. Hold that thought. And we'll be back in 6 months.
Yeah. So we would love for you to pray for her husband that he still would want to learn, you know, when we get back. So that's a long story, but she's really special to me. And okay, what do I do?
Oh.
This guy was addicted to porn, and she was also ready for a divorce. And
I'm done. It's over. You're out.
Oh, that's what she said.
Yeah.
But then John and Toby talked.
They called and said, can I come and talk to you? Sure. customer, so came and told me what was going on.
Which we already knew.
Well, we did. But, well, I said, you got a real clear choice here. You can have your family, or you can have this. Can't have both. And I said, which one do you want? Don't tell me today. I want you to go home and pray about it. He was a Christian. Think about it. And then come back in a week and tell me in a week. If you want your family back, I'll work with you. And we'll see. Maybe it might be, there's no guarantees. But maybe it'll work. And but it's going to be a fight. It's going to be hard. But I'll walk through this with you. We'll work together. He said, I want my family. I said, okay. First thing we did is we drew up. I had an outline. And we went through the outline. It was a contract, and I made him sign the contract. It's a 90-day contract, and it has certain specific things that he agrees that he's going to do and not do during those 90 days. And there's going to be continual accountability. Every week we're going to meet. I'm going to teach you, and we're going to work together on this every week. And then I'm going to put you in contact with another young man that will hold you also accountable that you need to meet with every week. And then we start working through the individual things. What is it that, you know, brings you into the problem? The first, where are the temptations? Where are the hard spots? What needs to go? And you just have to be ruthless in cutting that stuff out of your life and starting new habits and new ways of thinking.
And you asked him?
I asked him just before he came back, don't try to con me. I'm going to ask you a hard question. Don't try to pull a wool over my eyes. When is the last time you looked at any porn? Oh, it's been a long time. He said, let me think. Back. Okay, 18 months. It was 18 months ago. That's when we started. Yes. And I said, you got your family back? Yes. Are you happy? Oh, I'm so thankful. I'm so happy. I've got it back.
But
now
she is so happy. And she wanted to find a way to witness during COVID. So she's an excellent skater. And she decided to do a routine and have Tobit film her out on the ice. And she did it to How Great Thou Art, which happens to be an old Swedish hymn from the 1800s.
So
there were some believers in Sweden in the 1800s.
It's perfectly timed. She has the hymn playing in her pods while she's skating. Every move is absolutely, it's like Olympic figure skating, except it's just in the winter out on a lake in Sweden. Then she uploaded it to the neighborhood social website, which includes about 10,000 people. And the response was like, this is during COVID, overwhelmingly positive, including one elderly widowed man that was in her same apartment building, actually in the same stairwell, I think one floor under where they lived, and their family, her family, all of them, just kind of took this guy on as a grandfather. And they started loving on him and helping him with errands and buying groceries for him, and the kids were writing him cards and letters. And Nana gave him a devotional. They witnessed to him. They led him to Christ. And then a few months later, he got cancer and died. Happy in Jesus, knowing he was going home to be with the Lord. So these kind of things, you know, God does all this. Why? Well, because y'all are praying.
These are three different guys from three different countries, but we're not going to take the time to tell you about them. But this young couple asked us to do counseling with them before they were even engaged. They want to know if, is this God's will for us to be one? And so then after that, then they got engaged and wanted us to do premarital counseling, which we invested in a lot. We spent about a year with them because we're anticipating that they're going to be the ones doing it. And we've even given them an assignment now while we're gone. The Viking guy and the gal. So they said, I don't know if we can help them because, they're older than we are. But these are mature, And
so we asked these guys to help do a little premarital counseling with.
And then another thing, what we're doing this evening is, if maybe you remember that I teach a course on how to have natural childbirth for those that are interested. And I get some in the church, and some outside. It's a good way to get to know young couples. And so we did that with them, too, and now they've had their first. This picture.
Do it
a little faster. Are we running out of time?
Starting to run out of time.
Okay. This picture is a really sad thing for me. This is the most sorrow, I think. If you work with people, you're going to experience sorrow, right? It just doesn't always pan out the way you want it to. And this picture was 21 years ago. When I first met her, she was a transgender person. So she was a young man.
Girl living as a boy.
And she came to Christ, and she started growing. We're just studying the Bible every week. I never mentioned her dress or what she looked like, but every week she started looking more and more feminine, growing her hair out longer. And I think I met with her about 10 months, and then she sang in another Christian gal's wedding. I'll never forget that. She had this little brown dress on with yellow flowers all over it, and she was so cute. She had been adopted into a Swedish family because her mother had died in Africa. And the father was the head of psychological services in their city, and the mother was a social worker. But the father started abusing her when she was 2 years old. And she tried to commit suicide a couple of times when she was 10. Then she took matters in her own hand and became a boy to protect herself. I think a lot of people do this. Anyhow, then we had to go on a year of home ministry because we still had the kids in school and everything. And she was put with another woman but didn't hit it off with her, didn't want to open up to her, so she quit coming. And then she went back to the gay community in Gothenburg. And when we came back, I couldn't find her. And I just felt like, what should I do, Lord? Should I just go out in the street? Gothenburg's a million people. Just stand on the street corner and hope she comes by? Or I didn't know what name she was using. And anyhow, I didn't see her. And in November, 21 years later, I got an email. Do you remember me? From Victoria. She was using her real name, Victoria. I wrote back, of course I remember you, Victoria. I've never stopped praying for you. And then she wrote, I am fighting my way back to Jesus. I left out the middle part where I heard from another doctor that she had had a sex change operation, which is free in Sweden. They don't have enough money to fix the broken hip of an elderly person, but it's free for this. And so she had talked them into reversing the surgery. And they had done it. They can't do that perfectly, but they had done what they could. And so she is a woman again. And I've met her 2 times. Both times, we could not stop giggling. It's like, I cried for 3 days and 3 nights.
They just giggle all the time when they're together. They're so happy.
After I heard she had that operation, it was terrible. I couldn't stop crying. But now it's like the opposite when I see her.
So we would appreciate your prayer, too, for Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
She's very frail, and she needs the...
Her health isn't good because of all that, what they put her on and everything. Oh, and she went back to the group of six psychologists that made this decision and told them that this was a terrible thing. It was like abusing her all over again.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, my goodness. We were so sure, weren't we? Yes, we were so sure. You know, playing God. But
we use our home for all kinds of meetings, small groups, prayer groups, Bible studies. We show this picture because it has our two little Swedish grandchildren. They're Tina's two kids, Niels and Emma. We have lots of ministry there. We do outreach to our neighbors every summer. We have a big shindig on our deck. And I'd like to ask for a special prayer for Marcus because he's the guy that lives nearest to us, right behind our house. And I've shared Christ with him several times.
Every time John's out in the yard, he comes out and he follows him around like a shadow, you know.
Well, this is very unusual. This one, for a Swede to be so connected.
Yeah.
He just loves us. Yeah, both of them do, he and his partner. But there's too many problems to. Yeah, I can't really accept the existence of God and stuff like that. So I'm praying that I'll get some real good one-on-one time with him where we're not distracted by kids' activities, job problems, you know, running people and children place to place.
Swedes don't bother to get married, so all our neighbors are not married except us.
So no believers there with our neighbors yet. But we believe as we all keep praying for them, some or all will come to know Jesus. We don't have a church. We meet here. It's a community center on the second floor. They have a big meeting hall. We have two elders, Jakob and Håkan, which I used to teach years ago, seminary courses. And now they are the front men. They are the leaders. They are the face of our Swedish church. It's not an American plant. It's not an American church. It's a Swedish church, and that's very important in Sweden.
And our role is a support role, and when there's a theological controversy, you know.
So we're there more on a support basis, and it's kind of important because we don't have any paid staff, so they have to work a full-time job. In Håkon's case, he's so sick with a degenerative disease that he's struggling with. He's in constant pain all the time.
He's
can't work.
He's got disease of the joints where... Your back is always in pain, and it flattens out. I can't think of what it is.
So he has a lot of health problems. So we do a lot of work in the church, but we're kind of under their leadership, and that's why we want to keep it. So probably I do maybe most of the preaching, and then they kind of divide it up. We have about 100 people in Sweden. That's a big church. The average church in Sweden is 12. And there are a lot of them are smaller than that, you know, 5-6 people. It's a church. We're about 100 adults and 20-25 children. So there it's kind of a big church. Then COVID came and we had to go to online teaching and preaching. I taught a course over Zoom in creation evolution last fall. And then after COVID, we had a hard time getting everybody back, but they're all coming back now, thankfully. I asked Pastor how you guys had it. And then when we get back, we have we're flying out on the 14th of June, and we have about 1 week, 8 days, I think, to get ready for our biggest outreach of the year in Sweden, which is Midsummer.
Everybody celebrates Midsummer. You know, they might not come to a church, but they'll come to this. And John builds the pole out of our flagpole, and then the girls decorate it with the flowers. And this is the first course, herring and boiled potatoes.
Everything has to be traditional.
And then what means a lot to us is the smiles on these faces and the laughter, because Swedes have a pretty flat affect. You usually can't read them what they're thinking.
Violin and accordion, traditional Swedish music for Midsummer, and then we did the traditional dances around the Midsummer pole. And look at the faces, you know. It's like everybody's having a good time. We tell the church, invite your unsaved friends and family members and your classmates and coworkers, come to Midsummer, and they'll come.
And
but they'd never come to church.
Last time we had 92, so it could be more this year because we skipped 2 years for COVID. And then we have grill. You know, everybody brings something to grill.
Please pray for us.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to do this. And Muhammad comes, and he's taken a course with John on basic Christianity, brings his Quran every time.
He is such a nice man. I call him an honorable man. He is an honorable man, but a very faithful Muslim. He does not want to recognize Christ as God or become a believer yet.
We have to be patient in Sweden. I mean,
we're good friends.
Some people have taken 10 years, you know, but we keep this fishing pole going here, and another one out there, another, you know, you never know which one's going to.
Oh, then we have, yeah.
We have the dessert, which is always the Swedish meringue tort.
Then about 8:30, the gnats come out, and we all go in. You get eaten alive otherwise. And then the people with young kids, you know, they leave. So we're a smaller number.
Okay.
And then we have some praise songs and testimonies. And I usually give an evangelistic message then. So this is all coming about 8 or 9 days after we get back. This is another thing that we've done the last few years. 6 years ago, we started CEF, Child Evangelism Fellowship, in Sweden. You know their motto, every country, every child, every day.
Well, we're not on CEF staff now. We're still with Cross World.
We're just helping them. And we got a board together, about 6-7 people, and we have now a team leader that's a Swede who is giving by faith. He's cutting down on his secular job, so by faith he can give us 80% of his time.
He's
to work
a banker.
With CEF. And we're really, really, really thankful for the vision that he has and the amount of support that he's giving us. We have only 2 full-time workers in CEF there. That's a great prayer request, too. More missionaries or supporters or people that can come and help us
Romania.
With CEF.
Romania has 70 full-time workers.
Well, there were only 6 years ago, there were only 2 countries in all of Eastern Europe or all of Western Europe that did not have a sustainable CEF ministry, and those were Sweden and Iceland. So this is not right. The kids in Sweden need to have an opportunity to hear the gospel. Let's get CEF going. So these are 2 full-timers, but one of them is from Germany. Judith is from Germany, and she's stuck in Germany with long COVID, and she's having heart trouble, all kinds of difficulties with long COVID, and cannot get back at this point. Rebecca is our lone Swede full-time worker, and she's a single gal that is just an absolute workhorse and loves kids. She does clubs. She does special conferences. She represents CEF at Christian conferences, like the picture on the left. She's our literature coordinator. She does all the reception, distribution of all the literature.
Does most all the translation
for all the materials. There were no materials, not in zero, in Swedish when we started 6 years ago. Now we got all these materials. And she translated them. We get them proofread. We send them, get all the artwork done. We send it to Revival Press in Northern Ireland, and they print them up by the thousands in Swedish, free. That's their mission. Ship them back to us, and that way we can send them out to churches by the thousands. And they are really good materials. This is just a couple of things that produced in the last year, a children's song book and a course on Amy Carmichael, the evangelical missionary to India. And then we are producing in CEF Europe 1 million copies of this brochure, Do You Wonder Why?, which is about why do bad things happen, because there are so many traumatized children all over Central Europe and beyond, even in Sweden. over the Ukraine crisis and the invasion by Russia. And a million copies also in the Russian language, and 3 million copies in other European languages, including 100,000 in Swedish. So we can get these very important and timely gospel booklets out to kids. We did more summer clubs last year, last summer.
Outside.
During COVID lockdowns than ever before, because it was outside. We had more Christmas clubs this last December than any year previously. Still not nearly enough, but more than ever before, and in more cities than ever before in Sweden. So it's getting going. We're gaining a reputation. We're starting to earn credibility with the Swedish Christian community, and that's very, very important. But we don't want it to stop there. We want this to just exponentially reach out to the atheistic community, where kids never have a chance to learn about Jesus.
Well, you probably remember that we do this. We still do this every year, our Valentine's banquet, because this is where we get our most referrals from the couples. I do it so as fancy as I can. I've learned how to arrange the flowers, and I cook the food. But now I have these three wonderful gals that help me serve it. And two of them are divorcees, the ones on either side of me. But they are such committed Christians now, they want to help other people not end up with a divorce like they did.
Keep clicking because we get it. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the main course. No children are allowed except nursing babies. And this is the table talk. Then we have a couple. We choose a couple each year to sing the love songs. And then we have an exciting, challenging speaker.
Where did he come from?
With his Valentine tie on. And then we have a theme every time. And we make a marriage assignment about what he just spoke on. And we have them start it there. So they don't just take it home and throw it away. You know, they get into it. And then they have to finish it at home. Then we also make a 6 to 8 page program, because that's what's done at big fests like a wedding or a 60th birthday or something like
so
that.
So towards the end, we have a break, and I take the men down to the basement or out in the garage if I can get it cleaned in time, and I teach them a song. And it could be English, it could be Swedish, but the idea is it's got to be a song that is appropriate for a guy to sing to a gal, or a husband to sing to a wife, or a boyfriend to sing to a girlfriend. It's got to have some kind of humor in the meaning of the text. And a lot of times I will try to think of some way we can act it out. And then we practice it, we assign parts, and then we go up and move all the tables out to the side of the room, get all the ladies down to one end of the house and all the guys on the other end, and we serenade the wives. So you can see one of the guys.
This is my favorite.
Sometimes we use costumes and stuff like that. You see me with a top hat there. Anyway, they love it. The wives absolutely love it. In fact, everybody thinks, you know, there's nothing else like quite like this, actually. Because there's nothing for this. There's nothing that emphasizes marriage, that honors marriage, that builds marriage up, that helps these young couples in their, you know, in their life.
If you go to
together.
A party, like a 60th birthday party, or somebody's getting their doctorate and they have a 100 people dinner, you never sit with your mate. They have a man, woman, man, woman, man, woman, but it's somebody else's man, somebody else's woman. So, you know, your husband may be sitting over there. I mean, the whole culture is kind of set this
it's way. Actually okay. It's kind of good if you go there with the purpose of evangelizing, but nobody else does. When we go, yeah, we take advantage. New people share about Jesus. Much appreciated by all with proven results, and you can see right here. Really good results here. So, what do we have? 10.2 million people in Sweden. Who will tell them about Jesus? How will they hear without a preacher, and how will they preach unless they're sent? So what do we want to say? We want to say thank you for sending us. You are sending us so that we can be there as your representatives and servants of Christ in the atheistic country of Sweden. We've been with you, I don't know how many years, but it's over 30. It's a good bit over 30, right? And we only want to say one more thing, just for you to think about, pray about. We are under-supported, and we'd like to be able to get a little bit more before we have to go back in a month. Our mission board is encouraging us, they ask churches to consider a 20% increase if it's possible. I know you're not the biggest church in Albuquerque, so I understand there are limits, and that's okay. But just a bug in the ear if it's something that's possible. We love you guys no matter what, and we thank you for being on our team and sending us to that needy country of Sweden. God bless you guys. Thanks for your patience tonight. Been great.